We have a number of people just signing in right now, and I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Topic for today, how is your culture eating your strategy? My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. We'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, and we have quite a number of associations that are going to be participating today, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. And we do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar. We also assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business. We also offer sales and customer service training and operational productivity improvement programs. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow water so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we've been getting from around the world, and we want to address what organizations are facing today and also into the future. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join me with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line. We're going to turn the recording equipment off, since a lot of folks have told us they don't want their voices recorded with questions. And then you'll have an opportunity to talk with our guests directly. You'll want to have a pen, paper, pencil handy to take notes during this program so you can share the information with your team and trusted advisors. We have some amazing guests with us today who are very close friends and the best of the best of what they do in life, professionally and personally. They're just very cool people. I'm going to introduce each individual. Then we'll jump into our topic. Larry Cassidy, by the way, everyone is a today is a we're fortunate to have as a senior consultant with Lighthouse, and each of them have amazing backgrounds. Larry Cassidy is also a chair with Vistage International for the past 25 years. That's a long time, Larry. He currently works with some 50 executives every month and has facilitated over 1,200 executive group meetings and participated in 11,000 face-to-face discussions with chief executives and has dealt with all different aspects of businesses. He has prepared his journey at the Miami University of Ohio and Northwestern for his MBA. Larry was in the Marine Corps as an officer, has served with public companies such as General Mills, Quaker Oats, PepsiCo, has worked with private, family, foreign-owned firms, and in the 1980s as a general manager and CEO of local companies. Larry does executive coaching and serves on advisory boards. Tom Drucker. Tom is a global traveler, just got back from Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand. Tom truly gets out there and sees what's going on from a personal standpoint and from a business standpoint. Tom works with leaders to achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet unseen obstacles that get in the way sometimes. Tom has degrees in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impact on their businesses and, most importantly, on the hearts and the minds of people he works with. Tom has over 30 years of experience working with Fortune 500 firms, mid-caps, and startups. Paul David Walker. Paul has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for over 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, Vons Grocery Stores, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing organizations, global utilities, service and consulting companies. Paul's the founder of Genius Stone Partners and works with domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line today and for planning in the future. Paul is also the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius. If you haven't read it, don't have it, get it. It's a must-read book. Paul also has a new book coming out in the spring of 2013, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for a 21st Century Leader. And, Paul, I changed the title there a little bit, so forgive me on that.
It's always a working title until final publication.
There you go. I feel privileged to have Paul, Tom, and Larry with us today and to share ideas that will help us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for the will begin at the end of this program for our next topic, Global Strategic Planning, What Are the 10 Top Considerations? Tom, Larry, Paul, I want to welcome you guys. Let's jump right into our topic. We're going to, we only have 6 minutes per slide, so that allows each of you around 2 minutes. It's kind of like an open debate. No, I'm just teasing. It's not a debate. On this first slide, let's talk about defining culture. And for those of you attending, you'll see on your screen some bullet points. Those are just some starting ideas. We're going to take the main header and kind of use that as a jumping point. So why don't you guys share what your thoughts are for actually defining culture, since it's kind of a funky topic.
Well, I think we've defined it pretty well on the slide. Culture is how we do things around here. I mean, and how you do things around here drives your business, drives your behaviors, drives your actions. And so it's pretty simple. Every culture, every corporate culture, every personality of we used to call it the personality of the organization, has certain beliefs and assumptions that drive their behavior. Culture is a bigger thing than individual personality, but it drives the behavior of everybody in your organization.
I would agree with that, and I would just add that
This is Tom Drucker, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. That there are cultures. So in a company I was at yesterday, the finance function has a subset of its own culture different from the sales organization. And I would say that there are aspects of culture that are obvious, the way things are done around there, and then there are things that are kind of invisible, invisible or invisible ways that people do things or feel about the way work gets done or the way they feel about their job or their boss. And so I think we need to kind of x-ray a company culture to really grab hold of some of the nuances that really do drive behavior and make for the totality of a company's culture.
So that's it. And we're going to get into the x-raying part later, I think, in our discussion. That's very well captured, Tom.
Thanks.
Larry?
I agree with what Paul and Tom said. I think that stuff's hard to improve on. I'm a simple-minded boy. I think culture is, the end of the day, what do people really do? And I think there are differences from department to department. I think there's a lot of chatter about culture. I've actually had people say they don't have a culture. That's not correct. They do have a culture. May not be what they think it is or want it to be. But at the end of the day, you know, what you do is your culture, not what you talk about or what you hang on the wall.
That's right.
That's very well put. Okay, that's great. Thank you. That's how we just define that. Let's get into some of the other topics we're going to discuss. And we're going to leave this open forum for you guys. So let's throw out the topic. How can organizations find out what their true culture is? It's always a tricky one.
Well, you have to talk to people and find out what they do and why they do it. To me, you know, that is one way to do it, to consciously be interviewing people, asking them about what they do and why they do it. We have a bullet point for a culture survey. There's some surveys that you can do that will uncover your culture. Dana, you have a survey that uncovers individual personalities. Of course, the culture is cumulative total of those personalities, so research, basically.
Okay. Getting feedback. Thank you, Paul. Tom,
and
Larry?
I also think... Go ahead. Sorry, Larry.
Oh, Tom? Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, talking to people, listening to people, listening, I think, is probably one of the most fundamental diagnostics. You know, senior managers who go around and rather than kind of pitch are listening. You know, how are things going? What's working? What's not working? What needs to be fixed? I think when you listen to people talk about what their frustrations are, you begin to get a sense of what senior managers may not really understand about the culture. I'm thinking of one company where they made an IT decision about a particular software platform, and it just caused havoc. And they made the decision, they thought, for the right reasons, but it disturbed, disrupted, and really slowed things down. And it took a kind of brave person to go to the executive suite and say, you guys don't know the impact of the decision you made. They wouldn't let them use Skype, is what it was. And so I think it's very important for people to listen and to find out what, as it says on the slide, the true culture is. Surveys are great, but you don't do one. You have to do several, because trends are more important than unique data points.
Yeah, we did a survey at a large company, and it said, so define strengths and weaknesses of the culture, and overall accountability was really weak, really weak. And then we waited a month. We did another survey by department, and every department in the company had a high level of accountability in the survey.
Right, so, they're okay. It's the other guys.
It's the other guys, right.
That's funny.
It's usually the case.
What about for smaller companies, the companies that have 25, 100, 200 employees or so?
Well, I still think surveys are really very valuable. I think anonymous surveys, of course, you can do them online very inexpensively.
Mm-hmm.
Make up your own questions. Make sure that there are free form, questions that people can answer, not just multiple choice. I had one client recently. There was so much paranoia, they had to go to public libraries to use public computers because they were afraid their IP addresses could be traced back to them. That was the most extreme paranoia I'd seen. But it still helped to reveal the kinds of issues that were really stopping people in their tracks. And I think, as it says on the slide, you know, see who gets promoted and why. See who gets asked to leave and why. I think really culture, because it's such an abstract concept for a lot of people, we need to look at the actual behavior of what companies do, how they treat their customers, how they treat their employees, how employees treat each other. I think those are the really important data points. And then, of course, you've got to have executives in the C-suite who are willing to listen and understand and sometimes hear information that's in contradiction to what they hope or believe, because very often execs are in a bubble. And the owners are in a bubble. So whether it's a company of five people, I'm working with a small CPA firm right now, and they've got, you know, about 15 employees. And they just haven't been listening. And so, you know, we all learn to, you know, stop and look both ways before we cross the street. And I think sometimes we have to just ask people to really open their hearts and their heads to the nuances and to the truth that their employees, given the safety that often is necessary, to just speak up and speak out. And that's why sometimes it takes a third party to gather the information and to make it confidential, and then really help the leaders to hear the tough truth. Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes it's actually just very sensitive, and people are scared. There's a lot of fear in the workplace, and hopefully we help by taking some of that fear out of the workplace by making the behaviors and the norms and values that people really do live by explicit. And through that, a dialogue ensues and change can happen. Because if you do a survey, it's really important to follow up with small groups that deal with that data and make meaningful, measurable changes.
Thank you, Tom. That's excellent. Larry, before we jump to our next slide, do you have any thoughts on this topic?
What I wanted to add is, of course, surveys, of course, talking to people, et cetera. But if I didn't have those available, if all I had was a flashlight, what I would do going into a company first thing is I look very carefully at their financial statements. Where are they spending their money? Follow the money, and you will understand immediately what's important to the company. And then I would have the conversations, and in my mind and in my notes, I'd be comparing that to what the company is actually doing with its resources. I certainly do the surveys and talk to people. But I look, for example, at the organization chart is like the skeleton, and the job descriptions and all the stuff we write is like the muscles and all. But the real heartbeat of the company, you know, the vascular system, is the financial statements and where you spend money. That's where people make real choices in companies, including keeping me on the payroll or not, for the reasons that Tom and Paul just talked about.
Good point.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. I'd
agree.
Let's go to the next topic here. Those are good ideas, phenomenal ideas. What drives change in the culture? So organization figures out, okay, this is where our culture is at, this is where people get fired or hired or where the money is spent, and everybody wants, or people want to push it to a different level. How do you change that, bring about change?
Go ahead.
This is Larry. Let me chip in a couple thoughts. First, everywhere I go, people tell me that nobody likes change, and I think that's nonsense. We change a thousand times a day, each one of us. We're changing all the time. We change in our mind. You know, I think what really frightens people, in my mind, is loss. They feel that they're going to have a loss associated with change. So I think however you do it, you need to get that out of the way. You need to discuss it. When you discuss things, they tend to get smaller, not bigger. They're not as frightening anymore. And like the other folks on the call with me, Tom and Paul, everybody has their opinion on what drives change. I think you need something dramatic, you know, kind of a boot in your back to get your attention before people will change. Secondly, I think they have to believe that they can do it, you know, kind of what's called feasance. Hey, I've got a change, and I think I can do it. I see how I can do it. And then finally, there probably needs to be some sort of rewards if I'm going to go through all this, like my job's easier, it's simpler, I can make more money, I get to keep my job, whatever the rewards are. So there has to be an impetus, there has to be the belief you can do it, and there has to be some sort of reward structure.
Huh. And just to add to that brilliant list, there has to be training.
Yeah,
people need to be taught. I'm going through this now with a company that's going through a reimplementation of an Oracle system.
Ooh.
And there's just such an important element to just basic training to give people the skill level and the confidence to do it so that their anxiety isn't overcoming their willingness.
Which means, Tom, they have to be willing to spend the money on the soft costs, the money and the time.
That's absolutely right.
And the question always is, why would you not spend money on the thing that drives everything?
We're in a hurry.
Well, oddly enough, and unfortunately enough, I guess my wife calls it job security, is that very often some of the softer things are the last to be thought of. I have a client that they spent a lot of money on a SAP implementation, and they thought that the people who they were asking to help the outside SAP consultants knew the systems and didn't bother to map out the way it was done and the way it ought to be done. They skipped that because they thought they could save time and money. And
whoops.
As it turned out, now they got to go back and spend much more money and much more time because they missed that step. And they feel like, a little bit foolish because they didn't understand how much tacit knowledge was being embedded in the way people did things, and they missed that step that, you know, sort of we all learned in graduate school and in the real world. You got to really, really, really listen to the people and understand how it's done before you begin to change it.
And I think the one thing that's important that we haven't discussed is the leadership, the CEO, the executive team,
right.
And even in a small company, the owner, he's going to change, the culture is going to match their personality in general. They're going to drive what other people do. for obvious reasons. And so once you decide what the ideal culture is, and I agree with you guys, you mentioned earlier, there's no ideal culture.
No.
Culture has to match with the marketplace, with the customers, with the business drivers. And from department to department, it might be different. You know, clearly the sales department is going to have a different cultural paradigm than IT, right? Because IT, you've got to be careful and detailed and anal and all that. And in sales, it's all about personality and rapport. So it's a complicated process, but the leaders are going to drive the change. If they don't live the values they have on the wall, it's not going to happen. People are going to watch them and mirror them. And it's
and just to reinforce that, the leader has to be flexible. Because when the leader goes into the sales environment, they got to really reinforce the sales culture that they want. When they go into finance or IT, they have to absorb and understand how to be the leader of that group, because people need different things from the leader. And often in a small, closely held company, the leader grew up believing that if they owned the place, they could do what they want. And
that's right.
How they want it.
And the biggest... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And I just think one of the biggest mistakes is, you know, a leader not learning that their flexibility, without obviously being ingenuous, has to be a kind of driver.
Yeah.
And they've got to be smart about that.
And the hardest thing to change, though, here is previously successful behaviors. I think it's the problem we have right now with the financial crisis, a shift in global competition. A lot of leaders do things because their behaviors in the past were successful.
Right.
And those are the hardest behaviors to change.
You bet.
You know, Paul, to your comment about, you and Tom, to your comments about leaders, if you're on the sales side of life, and I suppose we all are, you understand that at any level in the company, there's one person who can say yes and everybody else can say no. And you want to reach the person who can say yes.
That's right.
If you want a cultural change, you have got to reach the top person, or it is not going to happen. If you don't have full commitment. If I work for you, Paul, and you've decided you want something changed, and every time I run into you in the hall, the first question you ask me is, how is that initiative coming? Pretty quickly I figure out that's important to Paul. I better get this done.
And get it done.
Yeah. If you don't ask me, if you're not involved, you know, just another one of Paul's, you know, ideas.
Flavor of the month.
Yeah, right.
People will do... people need role models. You know, it's a sort of a myth that we democratize the workplace. People want leadership. They just want leadership that's rational. They want to be understood. They want to know why the change is happening. They want to know the leader believes in it for a particular reason, and they want to see a pathway. But people actually want strong, clear, intelligent leadership.
One more thing. The most successful people, when they're acquiring companies or hiring people, they are sure to test them, understand whether they're how wide the gap is between the existing or desired culture and that person's personality or that company's culture that they're acquiring. And most financial people don't want culture people anywhere near them because they know it's just going to cause a problem with the deal. But
That's a perfect idea to segue into the next topic, and thank you for bringing that up. What has not worked? We're talking about driving change, and what hasn't worked? And then the next slide is going to be what does work. But let's focus on what hasn't worked that you know of.
Well, your first bullet point is doing nothing. I call it wait and hope, you know. When are they going to get this? When are they going to understand? Wait and hope is the sinkhole of performance and everything. So
a friend of mine, I think, said prayer is not a strategy.
That's right. That's right. Or screaming at people, you know.
Paul, when you and Dana and I talked, one of the things that we talked about might fit in here, and that is the CEO knows or should know, the business owner knows or should know, what's really important to them? How do they want this place to be, and what's important to them? Is it making a buck? Is it doing good? Is it? It could be anything. There's no right or wrongs, but they know. And what doesn't work is not being absolutely clear with your people, if you're the leader, about what is important to you. You have got to lay it out. You know, this is the kind of company that I want. This is how we do things. This is what you're expected to do. You know, I have a bargain with you. I'm going to pay you and do things for you, and here's what I expect. And it needs to be laid out. And then over time, you need to hire people. Not yes people, but you need to hire people that are wired that way, because by working to achieve their objectives, you, the owner, or the CEO, are going to get your objectives taken care of. And there should be no reluctance in being clear about what is important around here. I have members and clients who sit down with new hires once a month with the new hire group, and they make it absolutely clear, as the leader, what's important to them.
And you got to add the why. You know, why is this important? They have to see the reasoning behind it, too.
Yeah.
And
otherwise, by the way, that same approach works in small, a division or a function or a work group of three or four people. You know,
yep.
If you're going to change the way you do things, you just got to talk straight to people. You got to answer their questions. There has to be a kind of linkage between what you want people to do differently and why, and you have to support their learning curve and be very compassionate about the fact that people learn in different ways and in different time frames.
That's, I guess, throwing a temper tantrum. You guys should just do this. And mind reading doesn't quite work. What does work? You've all started to discuss a little bit. Any success stories where somebody started with a culture and they wanted a set way and they wanted to change it where it actually did work?
Well, you and I were talking yesterday, Dana, about a client that I have. It's a global company, and they had terrible difficulties with customer service because of the quality was uneven in some of their product lines. And the CEO took a mission, and he said, we are going to turn around our customer service while we turn around our quality and delivery time and supply chain problems. But he said, in the meantime, while we do that, we have to have a mantra. And the mantra is, every customer has a number, and that number is one. Every time you're interacting with a customer, they are our number one customer, whether they're big or small. And your attitude, your actions have to be consistent with that. And he has drilled that into not just his sales force, but his accounting systems and his IT people and all the other functions. And he has been an advocate and a spokesperson for that in a variety of ways. And he has rewarded that, and he has acknowledged that, and he's looked for people at the front levels and on the front lines who have done things that have been laudatory, and he's written them up in newsletters and put them on video casts and flown them to meetings to acknowledge them. And he has really, over a period of a couple of years, drilled that into the core of the company. And frankly, the infrastructure changes are catching up with the reality that people know that if they want to succeed in this company, they have to use that mantra. And that's true for external customers, and he's also made the distinction of internal customers, because particularly in a global company, you got handoffs going on around the world. It's a 24/7 kind of environment. And so he's drilled that into respect for internal customer relations and interactions as well. And I think it's a great success story.
And it was interesting. The other day we were at Ralph's Grocery Store, it's owned by Kroger's, and the cashier mentioned something to me about, we were talking about culture. And he said, well, our culture is customer-driven, and the corporation makes sure that we remember it, because on their checks, every time they get a paycheck, it says the customer has made this possible.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked with Bell Atlantic, which later became Verizon, helped them build the company. And at the help desk, we put a mirror on their computer, and under the mirror it said, they can hear you smile.
Yeah, that's great.
Right? So that was immediate feedback. Every morning they get there, they saw themselves in the mirror, and, hey, smile. Another group, I had the inside salespeople during the depth of the recession. We put together a number of scenarios about their value proposition in the recession. And we actually taught each of the inside salespeople and salespeople to communicate that portion of the value proposition in different ways weekly. The result is they didn't dip like their competitors because they were clear on what the cultural value for the customer was, and they found different ways to communicate that, sort of natural ways that started to penetrate the customers thinking about them.
Yeah. I just think Paul and I were I'm sorry.
Consistency works. I'm thinking of a situation where a utility company, paid lip service to quality until, unfortunately, one employee died. And that catalyzed the CEO to take safety and loss prevention to a whole new level.
Hmm.
And, sometimes an event will create a transition from what you might call lip service and, reading the signs on the wall to really building it into everyday behavior and to create rewards and recognition that support that.
Right.
Because people will be motivated by a variety of things, including money and recognition.
And you've got to make sure that your cultural values are not motherhood and apple pie, or not the values of the owners because they believe in them. They have to drive business outcomes. You will not change people's behaviors if they can see that this is contrary to their success or the company's success.
Absolutely right. They got to win if the company's going to win, and vice
right.
versa.
Paul and I were talking the other day. I don't know why I brought this up, but I was talking about the outstanding customer service from Verizon, at least that I've experienced consistently over the years. Very friendly, knowledgeable people. And Paul goes, "Oh, well, that came from. Oh, that was from his work way back when with Bell Atlantic. So when something is put in place that does resonate back to the customer and fulfills all the needs across the board." It's very lasting and just has a nice ripple effect for years to come. Larry, do you have any thoughts before we move on?
No, I think it's been pretty well covered.
Okay, let's go to the next topic then. This is an amazing discussion, by the way, guys. Thank you. So, how do you know if it's time to take action, and where do you begin?
Well, for me, business performance drops. Not all the time, but much of the time, it's at the root of the problem. And people will always say to me, Paul, there are outside factors. It's not all about culture and leadership. Well, horseshit. Outside factors are dealt with by the people in your company. If you have the wrong culture, they're not dealing with them correctly. Bottom line, that's it. Performance.
Yeah, and I think all the bullets on this slide are really brilliant. And I can say that because I didn't help create them. I was out of the country when you guys did this. But
we waited until you were gone, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, we knew we'd get a clearer picture, yeah.
But really, seriously, all of these 5 points are exactly right. And if any of these things, are occurring, or all of them, you really got to kind of stop, look, and listen before you go anywhere because you've got a disconnect that's really eroding the business value. And the basic value of the business is in the way the people are operating the business. And if you've got problems, it may not just be a process that needs improving. It's got to be the people who are operating the process as well as the process.
I'd like to toss in, I agree with all of these. And a lot of them are symptomatic, which is exactly what we want on this chart. I also believe that there are no surprises. And for all of you who are listening out there, when something kind of goes wrong or doesn't work right, and we get done saying, how could this happen and what's going on here, and down deep inside, there was something that we missed. There was a warning. And when I work with people and they're out of sorts and they're just, things aren't right, it usually means that they are misaligned with one or more of their values. Something is not being done. They're not behaving in alignment with who and what they say they are. And I think it's the same thing with culture. If I'm the CEO or owner and I ran companies, I can actually think back that far and remember a few things that it just didn't feel right to me. It wasn't happening the way, whatever. And don't ignore that sixth sense when you're the leader, because yeah, something is not aligned in your company. We happen to be talking about culture here. It could not be perhaps not aligned with the system, but that's actually a piece of culture. You know, if you don't follow your systems, that's part of your culture. So your instincts are better than you give them credit for being. Pay attention.
That's right.
Right, and you don't have to be the CEO to use those instincts. You can be a manager. You can be an individual contributor. You can be anyone in an organization, and you can have a sense or an observation that something isn't right.
Right.
And you can begin that process of dialogue and discovery. So, you know, I'm sure that everyone listening on this webcast are not CEOs. I'm sure they, I'm sure you're from every, you know, parts and levels of organizations. I hope so, at least. And one of, I know, our missions is to empower all of you to use your instincts and to talk with your colleagues about what you see that's working and what you see that's not working, and find ways of surfacing what you believe will be a constructive dialogue to improve what isn't working. And that's the best way into how you know it's time to take action.
Oh, that's good. All right. Wow. Now, how do you measure the ROI that comes along with change? Hey, people will say, oh, you know, we start from this date. But how do you really measure that?
Well, first of all, I think you're so spot on, because sometimes people just forget that you can measure it. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, that culture, that soft stuff, you really can't measure it. Well, that's nonsense. You can measure it a variety of ways, and this slide is a pretty good starting list. Just know that whatever measure you use has a certain requirement to be consistent. You know, talking to people is a really important way to see if change is sticking, because I can't tell you the number of times I've come into companies behind a change effort that hasn't worked because it hasn't been consistent. You know, you'll see a spike and things will go well for a while, but then, you know, people are people, and if it isn't reinforced in all the right ways, then there will be a gradual recidivism. And so the most important thing I would say missing from this list is consistency.
Yeah, and so whenever I do a project, whether I'm coaching an individual CEO or somebody leading a department or changing the culture, I always set business goals. And I'm looking for business goals that will require, to implement them, to be successful, business goals that will require a change in the culture. So there's no way you're going to be able to improve innovation if you don't change these cultural values. There's no way you're going to be able to penetrate a given market if you don't shift these values. So I start with tying it to performance outcomes. As we dig into why the performance is not going the way you want it to go, it's going to be a cultural issue most of the time. So then we're connected right away. When we begin a project with a client, the goal is to improve, give, you know, X, Y, and Z business performance.
Absolutely.
And And then we dig into it, and the culture always comes up. I mean, there are other things besides culture, but the culture always comes up. And so we drive the whole project around improving those business outcomes, and the only way to do that is to change the way we do things around that goal. That's culture.
There's been, to that end, a fair amount of stuff written that I think documents that solid, consistent cultures in companies tend to produce better ROI, better results.
Yep.
And so there's good stuff to be looked up. I would toss in, and I guess this ties back into my comment about instincts and as the leader, kind of that sense that things are or aren't where they need to be, is don't overlook ROE, which is return on emotion. When you're upset constantly about what's going on in your company, that's not a very good ROE. And when you do the things that Paul and Tom are talking about, and you measure them, you see they're going in the right direction, I will guarantee you your ROE will go up, which means your E will go down. That's a much better place to be when you're a leader.
Yeah, nothing less productive than pity parties and complaining and finger pointing, you know. So.
Exactly.
Wow, those are great ideas. Let's get to the last slide, and then we're going to open up the line for everyone to ask questions, if anyone has questions. Let's get to the last slide here. And going forward. Yeah, here we go. Okay. Let me back up. We're not done. Okay, next steps.
Don't try this at home.
Well, and let me just say something about that. You know, I think Buddha said the three great mysteries of life are air to the bird and water to the fish and human beings to ourselves.
That's right.
It's very hard for leaders, whether you're an owner of a company or a manager of a department or just an individual, to see the world clearly. You often need, you know, like a GPS system. You need to triangulate. You need to get other people's views who aren't part of your division or your work group or your company. And so sometimes experts can just be a buddy in another department who you have a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, God knows it would be great if you needed any one of us to help you, you know, with a company issue, and that would be great. But I don't want to let the conversation, rest on professional change agents, of which we all are, and proud of our success and proud of our track record, because we've been working at this all of our professional lives, and I know these people, and we're all good at what we do. But there's nothing that stops any of you from reaching out to a buddy or a colleague, and over a cup of coffee or lunch, tell them what you see and what you think and ask them their ideas. There's something very important about being able to be open to the perspective someone else may have who knows you and knows your people and knows what's going on. And as it says there, examine your own behavior and compare it with the ideal or what you want. I mean, you sometimes want to start where you are. So I just wanted to add that before we get into an expert is and what that means when you call them in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people used to say, well, why should we hire you? Why can't we change our culture? And we used the comment that you came up with, Larry. We'd say, we don't know who discovered water, but we know it wasn't fish.
Good, I like that. No, Buddha didn't say it, but I like it anyway.
Yeah, it's the same thing, yeah.
The people that I work with have for a long time, and I was exactly the same way when I was running a company. We're responsible people. We have a broad vision for the company, and sometimes we mistake that as believing we have the answers. I agree with what Tom was saying. I think that the best changes in anything are a combination of the leader and some expertise, whether it's internal or external, kind of coming together. Question that I wished I'd known to ask myself years ago when I was running a company and I was faced with an issue that had some technical component to it is, how many people have called me lately and asked me to come in and consult on that? And if nobody's called me, nobody's asking my opinion on changing the distribution system, or that, then maybe I should seek some outside help from somebody who gets a lot of calls and gets asked by people to do this.
That's right. You know, all professional golfers have a coach. Why? Because they can't see their own swing.
Exactly.
Ooh, that's really great. Wow.
And because they can afford it, and so can you.
Yeah, right. And they can't afford not to have their swing deteriorate. They can't afford that either.
And the other mistake, mistake or maybe myth, is that calling in an expert is expensive. You know, sometimes the more experienced people can do things economically, because they can kind of, like an x-ray machine, see what's going on, give you some things to do on your own, come back, help you again. You know, surveys have become enormously less expensive. The trick, of course, is using the data correctly, and that's more important, frankly, than what the survey is constructed by, is how you deal with the aftermath. So there's some what we call rookie mistakes, and sometimes an expert can help you avoid those rookie mistakes.
Yep.
Because people, human beings, are complicated. We're all complicated, and there is nothing more important than honoring the complexity and uniqueness of the people we work with as you migrate from where the company is to where it can be. And so sometimes a little bit of expert help at the right moment in the right way teaches the leader then to do it themselves. You know, it's the old thing, you give a person a fish or you teach them to fish. And certainly all of the people on this call are committed to teaching people to fish.
Yeah,
I think if we look at our organizations and how we're doing business, we're all outsourcing things. I mean, you don't have a printing company inside your company, so you outsource stuff to be printed. And when you go call Paul up or you call Tom up to bring him in to help us, you're just outsourcing. That's all you're doing. It's very natural. And you should be real clear with the consultant what the outcome is that you believe
right.
you want.
And I always have not only an entry strategy but an exit strategy, because you know, there's a myth that sometimes a consultant comes in and, you know, you're there forever. And that never happens with, I'm sure, any of the people on this call. We always are concerned about, you know, what we call the boundaries of an engagement. We look to see what we're planning to do. We do it, we measure it, and we conclude it. And then if there's more to do, then we start the cycle again. But very often you want time for those changes to really set into an organization. You want sustainability, and you want the leaders of the organization to know how to do some of this sustainability themselves.
I think
absolutely.
My most successful engagements always end.
Ooh, that's well put.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're not doing your job.
That's right. You're creating unnatural and unhealthy dependencies.
Yeah.
Dana, is the clock making you nervous?
We are just about there. Let's do a 30-second, one-minute wrap from each person, then we're going to open up the line. Larry, any closing thoughts?
No, I think what the folks have said, I've been listening to a lot of what Paul and Tom have said, is really good stuff, and if I were in the shoes of anybody listening, I'd play it back.
Okay.
You always
hear
more the second time.
Perfect. Tom?
Well, I would just say one of the things we probably haven't touched on is something very basic, and that every human being wants to have meaning and purpose in their life. And I think work is an important form of self-expression. And so at the core of change is making sure that people find a purpose in what they're doing in their life, and that that impacts them professionally and personally. And it is the enduring engine that fuels human growth, and that's at the core of what we've been talking about.
Beautiful. Paul?
I agree with what Tom just said, and I would add that you have to create a culture that growth is critical. The leaders of a company cap the growth. If they're not growing, the company will not grow. So that's so important.
That's well put.
And in fact, the company cannot grow any faster than the leader grows.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, say that one more time, Larry.
A company cannot grow any faster than the leader grows.
That's a nice concluding thought. Thank you. We're going to close this part of the program, but for those of you on the line right now, hang on, because we're going to shut this down, and then I want to turn the recording equipment off, and then we're going to open up the line. We've had a number of people that say they just don't want their voices recorded with certain questions, so we want to respect that. You'll see in your screen an area you can register for our upcoming March 19th open line program, which is entitled Global Strategic Planning. What are the top 10 considerations? And Tom Drucker will be leading that program next month. So please sign up today. Reserve a space for yourself. Let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues or association members to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. As Larry suggested, listen to it over and over again. Share it with your friends, your colleagues, trusted advisors, and other folks. Tom, Larry, Paul, and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that were shared. If you'd like to contact Larry, Paul, or Tom, Paul, or Larry, or in any order you'd like to have further discussion on this topic or other topics, something in your industry, something about your team, something about your organization, or just some one-to-one time, you'll see the contact information for all three on your screen. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California, in the U.S. of A. Our mission statement, to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics, and this topic, by the way, came from those that attend these programs, let us know and we will make it happen. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a wonderful day. Hold the line. Let me turn the equipment off, and then we'll open the line up.